we had a little bit of a technical difficulty, which probably makes sense since this is our first YouTube live recording, but everyone's saying it's fixed now. So what we touched on a little bit was Nick went into Dan's repertoire a little bit. We also talked about his Rocket fanhood, LeBron going to L.A. Justin talked to him a little bit about fantasy football. Dan, I was just wondering, I know most people might not know, you were college teammates with Michael Wacha and Ross Stripling, and now Ross is in the All-Star game. Have you reached out to him? Has he reached out to you? Because that's a pretty awesome thing. College teammates, excuse me.
Yeah, you know, that's awesome. You know, he's been my throwing partner the last 3 years in the offseason. I have the same agent, went to college together. We do a lot of stuff together in the offseason, go hunting together. So, I mean, we do a lot of stuff together, and so it's really awesome to see him, you know, come into his own. I think he started the year in the bullpen, and they kind of gave him a shot as a starter with a bunch of injuries, and he just ran with the opportunity. And it's what you got to do. Baseball's all about opportunity and timing, and he's in the right place at the right time and took off.
Yeah, he's really been having a great season. One of the better stories of 2018. I know Justin wanted to ask you about what everybody on the screen is, whoever's watching is probably noticing. Yeah, he's doing the signal there, the mustache. Justin, take it away, man.
All right, it is an 80 grade mustache, best mustache in all of baseball, in my opinion, at least in the modern game. So you gotta tell me the story behind where the mustache comes from, and then like, do you use like a product in it? Because I'm a guy with a beard, and I can do weird things with my beard, but I can never get it to go in the right spot.
So it started out in college. Our college coach, Rob Childress at A&M, didn't allow us to grow facial hair except what he grew, and he just grew a regular man's mustache. And so, you know, trying to be a smart aleck kid, one of my buddies back home was kind of like, hey, grow some like super crazy mustache. And I was like, okay, what the heck, we'll do it. And so I just kind of started growing it long, and I curled it up. And then it was my sophomore year where I was throwing really well. Ended up making Team USA and stuff like that. And so it's just, I started throwing really well with it. Our fan base latched onto it. And I did it again my junior year. And then after I got drafted, all the crazy A&M fans kept telling me, I got to keep it. And so, you know, I was like, well, what the heck, let's just roll with it and see what we got. And just kind of kept it ever since. And then I got traded over to the A's, and everyone told me it might have been fate that I got traded to the A's, the mustache, and, you know, ended up getting my debut and pitching with them still. So, you know, maybe it was a blessing and a curse that a mustache got me here.
I saw it in person, and it is a pretty intimidating mustache, I'm not going to lie. It kind of takes over your whole face, especially in person. So it was pretty cool to see that up close. I don't know if you heard, Trevor Bauer said he would be shot in the nuts with a paintball gun if he signed a multi-year deal. You might have not heard about it. He said he's going to let his friend shoot him in the nuts with a paintball gun from 10 feet away. Is that something you'd ever agree to?
No. I'm out. for that reason, I'm out.
He said if he signs a long-term deal, he'll let his friend do that. So I thought that was pretty funny. And I know... Bauer's been in the news for a lot of things this season, so I thought
Bauer
that was...
Bauer is kind of a strange dude. I mean, I like him. I like watching him pitch. I kind of enjoy some of his antics, but he would be the kind of guy to let a friend shoot him in the nuts.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, everyone has their own, their own stuff they do, and, I mean, everyone has their own quirkiness to them. I mean, if he wants to get shot in the nuts with a paintball gun, go right ahead, take one for me, I'm out.
He is having a great season, so I think Cleveland will let him do whatever he wants at this point. On a more serious note, and I know this has been in the news recently with the MLBPA and everything, and Tony Clark's been a big component behind. He's kind of anti-betting being legal. I don't want to say anti, but he sees the concerns with the player safety in regards to betting being legal across the United States. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think that's a real issue as far as player safety goes?
I don't know that necessarily about player safety. I don't really know much on the topic. Like, we still wouldn't be able to bet on it, correct?
As far as I know, no.
And
yeah, you would.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, not that I would anyways, but I bet on football. I bet on the horses. I mean, I love going to the horse track. It's one of my favorite things to do. It gets me into it a little more. So if I, you know, think about it on the baseball side, I think it can help a little bit. You know, it might help. I guess revenue, generate more money. You can maybe, you know, do things to help different communities, donate some stuff maybe, or I think it could be good. Like, I don't think it'd be bad necessarily. I mean, I don't think it'd be bad for the game. It gets people more into it. You know, when people start betting, they go crazy. They get pissed. They break TVs. I mean, they're into it. So, I mean, I don't see why it would be a bad thing to do it. But I mean, I don't necessarily think there's a lot of good or a lot of bad to it. I think it's just, you know, just betting on a sport, betting on, you know, another something else to follow and watch.
I think his concern is that personal information is so easily accessible through social media these days that, say, regular Joe Schmo goes out, puts his life savings or whatever he has left on you going out there pitching a game. You have a bad game, you get lit up, whatever it is. Now he turns around, he has nothing left, nowhere to go. He finds out information about you that is pretty easily accessible on the internet at this point. I think that's kind of the angle that they're talking about as far as the MLBPA goes.
Well, I'll be all right in Texas, so, I mean, if you come to my house, you might be greeted differently.
Yeah, he's a hunter, so I don't think Daniel has got any issues there. I think what this law does ultimately is bring this out of the shadows, because I think the majority of people who are making large bets and are going to be making large bets have already been doing it. They've just been doing it either in Vegas or New Jersey or illegally online or through illegal bookmakers. Yeah. So, I mean, I there's obviously concerns, especially in a sport like baseball, where certain positions, pitcher especially, have such power over the outcome of a game. But at the end of the day, this is already happening. All this ruling does is make it more accessible and less illegal.
Yeah, I think if you know, you make it legal, like you said, everyone's already doing it through the illegal bookie stuff or the websites already, the FanDuels and the DraftKings and everything. So, I mean, people are already doing it. I think there might be a spike in people doing it once it becomes legal or if it ever becomes legal. But I think, like you said, the majority of bettors that are the high rollers that are betting big are going to be the same guys. You might get a trickle in of a couple guys here and there, but I think majority of the bettors will be the same people. And yeah, you might grab a few new people and get them addicted to it. But, I mean, I think it's, I don't think it's kind of irrelevant. If they do it, great. If they don't, I think it's going to stay the same. If they do or they don't. Like you said, maybe a little more accessible, a little more people, but I don't think it's going to be that big of a difference in the change. But, you know, it could be, you know, we never really know.
Yeah, the 18-year-old in me would really love that. Would really love betting exactly. To be legal. I don't know, it's too much about now, and I'm trying to save a little money, but the 18-year-old me would be very happy.
If anything, it grows the game a little bit, because, you know, what really has helped football is fantasy football. It's people wanting to go and watch, you know, people don't buy the NFL ticket because they want to watch 16 games a week. They buy the NFL ticket so they can go and watch their fantasy players. So anything you can do to grow a sport is good for the sport in general. And I think there's this thought process that gambling is evil, and you know what? People get over it. You know, whatever grows Major League Baseball for the younger generations, I'm all for.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, for me, on Sunday, or what was it? Monday, Thursday, Sunday, especially Sundays, I'm hitting that last button so many times, flipping back and forth to all my football games. Like, my guy's driving over here, but he's driving on this one too. Let's go side by side. I got both my running backs going down the field. I got my defense on my third screen.
That's funny.
And I got the Texans on my fourth screen.
That's funny.
I know. I love that.
Yeah, that's definitely one of the better days of the year, Sundays during football season. Last time I saw you also, we touched a little bit on Ohtani. That was when I saw you at Yankee Stadium. And I know Nick would love to hear your scouting report on Ohtani. Kind of, I don't know if you remember what you told me about him, but I know Nick would be interested to hear that one.
I haven't faced him. I think both times I pitched in the stadium this year, he didn't play or he didn't hit.
I remember you telling me about the guys coming back to the dugout.
Oh, when he was pitching.
Yes.
Okay, I didn't know which side you wanted. Our hitters, they said the first time they saw him, they said his fastball was electric and his slider was kind of so-so. They said when his slider was on, you know, with all three, the slider, the split, and the fastball, he said when he was locating, he was pretty untouchable. But they said that the one thing he didn't have, he didn't have a slider one day, I think, and the next day he didn't have a split. And you know, he only put up, I think, four runs each game, maybe four and three each game. They said he has his holes, but they said when he can locate the slider and the heater, I mean, he's just electric because everything just comes out nice and easy, and they said his split just falls off the table when he's on. So, I mean, he's young. He could be, like I told you, I think he might work into more of a hitter than a pitcher. You know, it's going to be hard to do both. It's, you know, you've seen his struggles so far on his body, on his elbow, trying to do both. And I did both in college, and by the end of the year on a 60-80-game schedule, I mean, I was completely gassed playing right field, pitching, playing four. I was only playing four games a week, and there, you know, we played about seven a week almost, six or seven a week. So, I mean, it's just tough on your body overall to be able to bounce back from pitching and having to go hit the cage with your elbow. Like, that was one thing for me, too, was that the hardest thing was after I threw, you know, my elbow's kind of sore, having to go to the cage and that vibration in the elbow over and over again every time you hit the ball. So I think it's just really hard on your body to be able to do both, and that's why I think eventually, maybe at the end of this year, in a year or two, you might see him just do one. And maybe be able to, like, I think it would be easier if he hit and maybe was a closer reliever, possibly. I just think it's going to be hard for him to continue to start and have to be able to, and then be able to play, you know, right field, DH, or whatever, first base, whatever he does defensively.
Yeah, I think you're completely right there. Man, but he's, as you said, he can be so great on that mound, especially when that slider is fantastic. I remember, actually, the best camera angle we ever had on Ohtani was in a spring training exhibition game. And I know it's crazy to say that, but whatever. And his slider was so good in that game. And you really just saw the massive, not only the drop on him, but the horizontal bend. I mean, you never really saw it this year. Obviously, he had that great game against your A's, but that was really, I think, the splitter taking over in that game. And obviously, of course, the heat involved too. It hurts me to even think that we're just going to give up on the pitching side. I completely agree with you, Daniel, that he needs to choose one of them. But the fact that he has so much potential, such a high ceiling as a pitcher, I want to see him out there as much as possible, even if that means we have to wait for a lot of 2019. Maybe he has to go under the knife or whatever. I have to think that investment is still worth it for the long haul, because I don't know how much I would
stop with this hitting thing.
I just think it's not that valuable, right? He's not.
I don't think he's as special of a talent as a hitter as he is a pitcher.
Right.
That was my next question for you, Mr. Fangraphs, was what's more valuable, a starting pitcher or a hitter?
I think I always, you know, when I was more of a novice analyst, I always thought, well, a hitter's out there more games. But Doug Thorburn, who is a fantastic pitching analyst, pointed out to me once that a pitcher is more responsible in a game for more pitches, and they're the only person that is truly involved in every single play that goes on during a game. And so over the course of a season, they're largely more responsible than anybody else. And so he's a special talent as a pitcher, and I think he could, if he committed himself full time to hitting, you know, for the rest of his career, I think he could develop into being a great hitter. But I think he's already a great pitcher, and so why mess with that? Why not just let him focus on what he's already great at? I mean, he was showing the skills of a top 10, 20 starting pitcher in Major League Baseball in his first season. Like, why mess with that?
Right. And put it this way, if you're in a playoff series and you're the Angels, what is going to have more of an impact for that team? Ohtani going out there twice a series, or him in the lineup, you know, four of those five games or so?
15, 20 at that. Yeah,
right.
I know.
It seems to me that that's just such a massive gap to me, especially with Ohtani's talent. As Justin mentioned, he's so impactful when he pitches. That has to be the investment here. That has to be where everything pushes.
Yeah, I think so. I think Justin said the best. Like you said, the pitcher's out there, you know, 6 to 8 innings, hopefully, at least six. I mean, every time he throws that ball, it's on him. You know, he has defense behind him. So, I mean, I think a pitcher, a starting pitcher at least, is a little more valuable on the scale of what he does for a team throughout the year compared to a hitter.
There's no bias.
Unless you're like Mike Trout, and then we can argue, like, okay, if we're talking top tier, or if we're saying top tier hitter, top tier pitcher, that's when you get into the argument of, I don't know, whatever the team needs, I guess. Like, what would you take? Would you take an Ohtani pitcher or a Verlander pitcher, or would you take a Trout?
take a Trout, of course.
They're both 21 years old, starting their career. Yeah, Justin Verlander or, you know, Mike Trout, or top tier pitcher in Mike Trout. You going with the defense, or you going with the pitcher?
If I could turn off the injuries for a pitcher, then I think we'd have a real interesting conversation. But unfortunately, pitchers get injured more often because it's more high impact on the arm. And so I think the long-term safety of a guy like Mike Trout versus like a Clayton Kershaw in their primes leans a lot towards the Trout, because you feel more guaranteed you're going to get a return on that long-term investment.
Right. And I think there's always that outlier, too. The guy never gets hurt his career, or he's always hurt his career. So you never know, too, with that certain player.
Yeah. Every pitcher's susceptible to injury, though. That's the thing. Even guys like Clayton Kershaw can't avoid it. There's one guy, I mean, Justin Verlander is really the only anomaly in the whole thing. That he's almost gotten better over the years.
Oh, what about his core injury, though? I mean, he missed like a year and a half with that. I mean, in terms of, you know, production. So even Verlander, who's been one of the steadier guys in the game over the last decade, has missed, you know, large chunks of time and had his production hurt by injuries, because it's you know, throwing's not a natural motion. It's not what your body is meant to do. And so it takes a toll over time, and I'm sure Daniel can attest to, you know, the aches and pains he goes through during the season just gutting it out there. I think the average fan goes like, whoa, this guy gets a blister, or this guy has, you know, a sore arm. Like, what kind of wuss is this guy? But, man, you try getting out there and throwing 90-something miles an hour, you know, every fifth day. That's insane, the amount of just testicular fortitude it takes to gut it out as a major league player.
Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that.
Yeah, I just wanted to get your we got 10 minutes to go here. I just wanted to get your opinion on the opener, because we never got a chance to talk about it. It kind of really hit the forefront after I went to that Oakland Yankee game. What's your opinion on all that stuff?
What do you mean?
As far as what Tampa Bay is doing with the opener, with the relief pitchers starting an inning. And
I guess I see it, you know, by throwing the closer or reliever, you know, you eliminate the 1, 2, and 3, so the third time you're seeing him line up, you know, it's in the, you know, seventh inning, hopefully, if everything goes according to plan, you know, you're just skipping those guys for the starter, getting away from the third time through. You know, it makes sense a little bit, but it's also, I think, harder on the starters. You know, I don't like, it's very awkward not having your base routine going into a start compared to, hold on, you might have to sit for 10 to 45 minutes.
Right,
because sometimes innings run long, and sometimes innings go quick. So throwing that closer out there, it could be great, like it's been for the Rays so far. You know, 1, 2, 3 innings, or you know, you could run a little bit of trouble, and then maybe your offense starts a big first inning, or you know, you throw another relief the second inning. Your starter's out there. He's already warmed up, already stretched out, everything's ready. Then he has to sit down for 30, 45 minutes, and then redo everything, and also get ready. Only in the bullpen, not have the time to throw again. That's for me, like, routine. Like, I like being able to throw long, come in, do my little flat ground work, get on the mound and go. You know, you have to do all that work and then sit down for 30 minutes and then get back onto a mound and then restart everything. So, I mean, it's definitely a lot harder on the starter. You know, if so far it's working, I think he's just trying to change the game a little bit, maybe, and you know, be different.
I think the way Zach Greinke put it yesterday was, it's genius, but it's bad for baseball. If I'm not mistaken, that was the quote. It works, but it's bad for baseball. So that's the kind of sentiment I have. And I don't know about you, Nick. You're a pitching coach. You feel the same way?
Yeah, I agree a lot with Daniel that he's lost his other team. It's also, you know, the philosophy in your head. Like, when you're going out there, this is my game from the very start. And there is definitely something about that. You know, I pitched in relief a lot in college, and I know the mentality that, yes, this is mine now, but it's completely different when you have a routine, you go into the game, everything that happens in this moment, it could be a perfect game, this is yours to decide that, and using the opener kind of takes that away.
And if I'm not mistaken, like, even though the Rays have been great pitching-wise since doing this, it's largely been on the back of the guys they're not doing it with, with like Blake Snell. I mean, Blake Snell's not getting an opener, and he's been one of the guys carrying this Tampa Bay team, keeping them somewhat in contention, though. I mean, let's be honest, they're not really in contention. It's not been on the backs of these openers. I think there's been this narrative that the Rays have been great since doing this, and while they haven't been doing it on the backs of the relievers and the guys following them up. They've been doing it on the backs of the guys they're not doing it to.
Right. That's a very good point.
I think a really young core of players that want to win and that are hungry too. So I think people kind of throw that out the window too, like saying, "Oh, it's just the pitching that's winning." I mean, the bats they have there, you know, they've acquired some guys over the last couple of years, the younger guys, and you know, they're all up there in the big league. Their team, I think, is even younger than the A's now, or getting close to that. And you know, they sent a bunch of young guys, and Joey Wendell from the A's, you know, playing second base and starting every day. You know, they have a bunch of young players in that team, and I think they're a really good team. It could be in a couple of years if they. You know, the organization goes the right way, like you said, behind Snell being the workhorse and just dominating.
So, if you guys don't mind, I have one more question to ask you, Daniel, if you don't mind. With your four-seam fastball, there's this whole revolution going on about elevated four-seamers in the zone or actually above it with breaking balls in the lower third or below the zone. And looking at your repertoire a lot, like you have that curveball, you have that slide, but you do a really good job of staying low, even the changeup as well. But I've noticed that your fastball is, if anything, gravitates more low as opposed to high. Has this been a discussion? I could consider maybe trying to raise the ladder a little bit.
Yeah, you know, just a mix. It kind of depends on the hitter and the situation we're in. You know, I've always been a fan of, you know, keeping the ball down, keeping the sinker and the four-seam down. You know, a fastball at the knees is really hard to hit. So, I mean, it's all situational, kind of. I like to gravitate more toward the knees and down low and, you know, trying to get ground balls. And I think it plays off my stuff better with my slider, my changeup, kind of being a fly ball pitcher, just trying to get it down. And then when I do come up, I do try to come up with authority and do try to throw, you know, up hard and in or, you know, just up in general. But it's just a weird mix, you know, just day to day. Some days, you know, you might go out there and throw all fastballs and get all outs. And you're kind of like, okay, well, you're just going to keep doing it. So, I mean, it kind of depends on what the other team's showing you, how aggressive they are, and, you know, what their holes are to begin with going into the game.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, we still have Ross Stripling, for example. He's doing a really good job of staying up with that and then pairing that with his slider kind of comes to the middle and, of course, a massive curveball down. Blake Snell, when he's performing his best, he does the same exact blueprint. We've seen Jay Happ with his massively high strikeout rate. All of a sudden, he's throwing four-seamers up a ton. Instead of trying to keep it low or inside to right-handers. And the thing is, I think your repertoire, especially at four-seamer, is built for this. I just had to mention that. I don't know if it's been mentioned to you before, but I see it, and I just see, man, I can see you missing a lot of bats if you stay consistently at the top, especially considering that you slide in a curveball then completely change the eye level down. But I mean, who do I know? I'm just a merchant guy here.
It's good info. Like we get info like that all the time, saying, you know, like, hey, you say my last start, I threw, you know, a bunch of changeups here. It's like, oh, your changeup is really good in this area. You know, keep working on that. Or like you said, fastballs up. You know, if I threw a couple good heaters up and into certain guys, you know, they'll tell us. And same with sliders and everything. So, you know, we're always getting feedback too from our guys. So, I mean, you know, I'm always open to, you know, suggestions and looking at stuff. Like, you know, if you see something like that, you know, it's okay, it's interesting. You know, I'll look at it, think about it. You know, never against it.
Yeah, I remember I did a podcast with Trevor May, and he told me that somebody tweeted him something about his release point and sent him a bunch of, like, I think it was three or four pictures of his release point now to where it was beforehand, and he said that completely changed everything for him. Just a random person on Twitter, he brought it to his pitching coach, and they worked on it, and from there on, he was such a better pitcher, he said. So, I mean, there's always stories like that. I'm sure we don't know about a lot of the stories like that, but that was pretty cool to hear it from Trevor May himself. 2.5 minutes left. Justin, you got anything left for Dan here?
Sure. I want a suggestion from you, Daniel. You're in the Bay Area. I'm in the Bay Area. Where's a good place to eat in the Bay Area that I've never tried?
Ooh, man. This is a Mark Canna question. See, I haven't really ventured into San Francisco that much. And, you know, Oakland, we kind of stay away from it. I'm literally in Walnut Creek. I live out there, and I that's really kind of where we stay. Like, we literally are Walnut Creek to the field and back. You know, I'm sorry, but I got nothing for you. I'm not really.
I'll hit up Mark on Twitter. If you're ever in the North Bay, hit me up. I'll show you around.
Sounds good.
All right, Dan. Appreciate you coming on the show, man. Really, really appreciate it. Everybody go follow Nick at PitcherList. Go follow Justin on Twitter, Justin Mason FWFB, if I'm not mistaken. Justin Mason FWFB. Follow me at Mike the Rotocop. Dan, best of luck to you, man. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right, I'll be in touch, man.